My name is Jachimike, that is J-A-C-H-I-M-I-K-E, and this is the Nigerian History Podcast.
Hi everyone, and it's good to be back in the Nigerian History Podcast. I know the podcast has been inconsistent, but I am happy to be back and to see a lot of people eager to learn about Nigerian history. As we begin to chart our way through Nigerian history, it is important to note just how much information we have to sift through. Oral tradition plays a major role in documenting and passing down culture and history. And as Nigerians, a lot of us are acutely aware of the prevalence of oral history and the place it has in our culture. Unfortunately, though it is a binding force for passing down the essence of its people, as a method of documenting history, it's not exactly the method we would prefer to use. This is why most of what we've seen so far has been based on archaeological information as opposed to oral information. And our first solid idea of a civilization in the Nigerian region is really the Nok culture, famously known as the oldest civilization in the history of the Nigerian region, as far as we know, right? We can only really extrapolate from the findings to understanding how some of these much older societies worked. The complexity of some of their ironworks gives us a clue to the nature of the people who made them, and thus some insight to their societies that allow them to flourish. We will get more clarity as we go along on the podcast, as more sources become available and as we get closer and closer to modern day Nigeria. But considering that we are currently approximately 2000 years from present Nigeria, the next few episodes will not be as clear as we might like. We are still walking in uncertain waters, and this is especially clear when it comes to the origin of these societies. On the last episode of the podcast, we began to talk about the formation of the large centralized states which emerged from the small decentralized states. The formation of these ethnic groups we know today, like every other thing, grew slowly. And it was from these decentralized states that existed prior to them. Like all things on Earth, human reality is gradual. Earth was formed over billions of years. Life has evolved over hundreds of millions of years. And our societies have grown over hundreds and thousands of years. The true origin of these ethnic groups is unfortunately probably lost to the annals of history. And here I hope for the creation of time travel. Instead, their origin is clearly founded in their cultural mythology. Like the history of other societies, exploring these origins is often dependent on the oral tradition. And this is not a tradition that we are reliant on. However, many Nigerians born in the Federation might be familiar with the traditional origins of many of these ethnic groups. The historical origins of most of the tribes we know today is still unknown. However, we do know that towards the end of the first millennium CE, many states in the Nigerian region began to become centralized. Now, the first millennium here means the same thing as the first century. It is the first 1,000 years of the Common Era. And the Common Era is a notation system for the world's most widely used calendar. For example, we live in the year 2020 CE. You may be used to the other method, which is BCE and BC and AD, where BC means before Christ and AD means Anno Domini, which is Latin for in the year of our Lord. Now, there's a whole history of why we use BCE and CE now instead of BC and AD. In fact, the whole calendar system and why we use what we use is fascinating. However, for avoidance of doubt, we will stick to BCE, that is before the Common Era, and CE after the Common Era. BCE and CE map perfectly onto BC and AD, in case you were wondering. So back to the origins. We have very little verifiable historical information after the Nok civilization, and historical sources within the first millennium are very little. But as we go on, we will try to extract as much information as we can. Anyway, as early humans in the West African Nigeria region moved from hunter-gatherer societies to agriculture and livestock-rearing societies during the late Stone Age, the political economy of these societies also evolved to meet the demands of this change. As we have already seen, many of these societies were first decentralized, and that means that political authority is never higher than the village or village group level. A village is a hamlet, usually found in a rural, that is, non-urban setting, and according to most descriptions, it contains between 500 to 2,500 people. It is really an intimate setting, and we'll see how this influences governance. For comparisons, for example, cities like Lekki and Ikeja have populations that run into hundreds of thousands, which makes governance far more complex, of course. Decentralized societies might have multiple villages with an overarching cultural identity, and for a long period of time, we know that that is how every society in Nigeria worked. Each village would be a completely autonomous unit. So it is similar to a federation of sorts, even though the only difference, of course, is there is no king or president or no central authority. Centralized states are of a very different kind, though. Here, ultimate power is coordinated by a central authority, right? There are various kinds of the centralized states. Most of the world today practices some form of centralization. Modern Nigeria, for example, is supposed to be a federation. That is somewhere between pure decentralization, that is, there is a central authority, and pure decentralization, where each of the states is something of an autonomous unit, right? That is the intention. An example of a purely centralized state, though, is a monarchy, which, for example, you know, the Oyo Empire, the Kingdom of Inri, for example. In the second millennium, throughout the second millennium, purely centralized states generally emerged across the Nigerian region. So, if you think about how these two systems work, it is obvious that they cannot be divorced from the society they exist in. In fact, no political system can be divorced from its society. The Igbos and Fulanis, for example, offer similar but different expressions of decentralized political states. We will explore both of these cultures in detail later, but the generally accepted idea is that in Igbo, decentralization sprung from the belief in an irrefutable equality in Igbo society. It springs from a set of beliefs that is at odds with the idea of centralization of authority. For example, even though Igbo society was a kind of gerontocracy, where the elders had social authority and they laid issues before the people, every man had a right to speak and decisions were reached by popular votes, that is, ayes and nays, much like we have currently in the Nigerian National Assembly. However, if these elders made a decision that was unpopular, the people of that village could ignore them completely and bring village life to a halt. And I think it comes from the idea that the elders governed by popular, you want to say, vote. this was the expression. So their government was an expression of Igbo cultural life. Fulani decentralization differs in execution from Igbo decentralization, but it also springs from their culture. Fulani society is pastoral in this system of governance, is a direct result of their nature. So they herd over cattle hundreds of miles, searching for grazing land and water. Their political system is just as fluid as their lifestyle. Like the Igbo, the society's patriarchal and family leadership is determined by the head of the families. When the group is in a single location, the Fulani have a political leader, and this person is called the Ado. The Ado is not the Leviathan of the group per se, in the sense that we have now, because there is no fiat of violence, right? Rather, imagine the Ado as an expression of the group's consciousness. For example, before the group moves in search of pastures, the Ado moves around the group, eliciting opinions from everyone. The aim of this exercise really is to understand the feeling of the group, getting opinions from people within the group, and on that basis, forming a general advice that everyone can use, right? This position is more advisory than command. So at the end of this exercise, the Ardu then gives this advice to the people of the Fulani society. And then each family or household holder may then make their own decision. But the fundamental thing is that the Ardu has done an informing. And this is how it worked then. These two decentralized societies are of a different breed than centralized societies, and we count the Yoruba, Hausa, Kanuri people among these. Like the name suggests, there is a central authority. Yoruba society evolved similarly to Igbo society, and there is evidence that they occupied decentralized village societies as well. Of course they did, right? However, from approximately the 11th century AD, these decentralized societies merged into dominant city-states. Through the eyes of urban mythology, for example, you can see that unlike the culture of the Igbo or the pastoral necessity of the Fulani, the basis for kingship often emerges from a supreme religious authority. According to the creation myth, for example, Oduduwa founded the city of Ife and is regarded as the creator of earth and the ancestor of the Yoruba kings. Drawing authority from the supreme deity is a theme we see across history, from Roman emperors assuming the role of protector of the Christianity, to Japanese monarchs being considered living gods. Monarchies rarely derive their authority from the people and prefer instead to claim the divine right of kings, which means that they were invested with authority by the supreme deities of their culture. Of course, no matter what the claim may be, it is the people who, consciously or not, accept the authority of whomever the monarch may be. And often they do so with a sense of respect, I guess is the word. Because don't forget, many of these monarchies come into existence early on. Of course, expressing dissent is easier in centralized authorities, is easier in decentralized authorities than it is in centralized authorities and centralized societies. Largely because most centralized authorities, if not all, have a monopoly on violence, right? And even though that monopoly is intended to be used to defend that society from external attacks, because the authority can also be derived from a divine right, quote unquote. Monarchs often feel justified in using the same force against people within the society who speak up against the state. One of the exceptions to the divine right of kings claim is in Hausa society. According to their oral tradition, the Hausa states were founded by the sons and grandsons of Bayajida. And if you remember your social studies, right, Bayajida was the prince of Baghdad who arrived in Dara, yes, that Dara, and killed a troublesome snake in the well there. All the stories say the well, and I, and you might feel the same too. I feel like they mean a well, but it's possible they could mean the well, considering that even in modern days, wells serve about 3,000 people. But they could also serve 300 to 500 people. I really have no idea if they meant A or V. What's important though is that the Queen Magajia married Bayajida as a reward for this action. I feel like she could have paid him with funds. Anyway, she married him and then their sons and grandsons established the Hausa kingdoms. It's important to note that even though the sons of Bayajida, Magajia and Kabagari, and I have to pause here. So Kabagari is Magajia's maid and Bayajida had children with Kabagari. I'm not sure about the power dynamics here. Well, I am sure, obviously. So, but the children of Bayajida, Magajia and Kabagari are then credited with the origins of the Hausa kingdoms. The Hausa people, though, had existed obviously long before the situation happened. And it's important to make this distinction because even though the state is a centralized extension of the people, just like the Yoruba kingdoms and the Igbo kingdoms were, the people had existed long before the state. Prior to this Bayajida of a person, Dara had a matrilineal monarchy. That means that the political power was centered around the Kabara, the queen, not the king. And succession was from mother to daughter, not father to son. And so, obviously Bayajida destroyed this system. Of course, this is the reason we have this legend, and while we are not sure exactly how the origin of the Hausa and Banza Bakwaya Bakawi states came into existence, we do have a lot of detail about their societies, about their kings, as explicitly as possible, actually. As you can probably tell now, the origin of these societies is kind of murky in terms of detail. But there is a similarity in the way they all emerged. They all evolved and strove, as their ancestors did, to survive, to live and protect those they care about, and enjoy life as much as they can. The pursuit of happiness is a universal human goal. And even though I could not find an authoritative claim on the origin of the various societies that make up modern-day Nigerian society, there is a universality. And learning about our history over these years has taught me that even though we have different stories and our experiences are unique to us in actuality and in perception, we are similar in our humanity and our desires might be different specifically, but desire is a shared emotion and we all share many emotions as humans. And I am grateful for being able to have that perception of human life. On the next episode of the Nigerian History Podcast, we will take these centralized states we have mentioned and slowly begin to expand on who they were. Although the first millennium does not have a lot of accurate sources, especially early on, things start to open up towards the 9th century CE, and from then on we encounter the Hausa, Oyo, Benin, Ibibio, Songhai, and Warri kingdoms that we are all familiar with as well as other kingdoms that we might not be as familiar with, like the Kingdom of Ingri and the Aro Confederacy. Each of these societies works in their own ways, from the non-violent culture of the Kingdom of Ingri to the warrior kings of Benin. Every society is its own odyssey. Next week, we will explore one of the first kingdoms we have sources for, in a period where very little is known. We will explore origins and begin to be introduced to characters, and finally step out of the abstractness of archaeology into something more detailed. I hope you enjoy these rides as much as I enjoy crafting these journeys, and as Stephen West says, thank you for wanting to know more today than you did yesterday. I hope you enjoyed the show.